good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival and a whole bunch of other things. My co-host today is Dave Allen. Are you there, Dave?
I'm here, Mel. Happy Friday.
Did you fall off your chair or something?
I don't know. What happened? I don't hear anything.
Oh, I heard a lot, but I'm glad you're okay. Of course, that was Dave Allen, my co-host today, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, November 9th, 2018, and what a day it's been. And these markets have been just the strangest markets I can recall in 25 years, but I guess we live in some really bizarre times. But you had pressure on gold today all day, down 1460 at 1209. Silver was down 27 cents at 1425. Platinum was down 10 at 856. And palladium was down 12 at 1186. I'm assuming I didn't have a chance to look at the dollar. It was stronger. Of course, it is. 0.29 at 96.94. Crude oil was down 75 cents, broke through 60 at 59.92. And the paper markets today, the Dow was down triple digits most of the day, but off the lows, it's currently down 201 points at 25,989. The NASDAQ was down 123, 7,406. That was 1.65%. And the S&P was down less than 1%, 25 points, 2,781. 10-year yield, the percent came back a little bit, 3.19% on the 10-year yield. Hong Kong got a beating. It was down almost 2.5%, along with Japan was down a little over 1%. It's just very quiet in these markets, although there has been a lot of things going on. And just to the fires again, once again, Dave, in California are just, I mean, the pictures that come out of there are truly, you have these fires are just raging. Southern California, you have the 60-mile-an-hour winds, and the fire has jumped to Highway 101, and it's just, there's been quite a few deaths, and, 75,000 homes are, in danger from these fires, and it's just, it really does look like it's the end of the world. The military is there to help evacuate. And again, we continue to see the videos showing these terrifying drives of these poor people that are trying to escape. And we've seen even Malibu is in danger. And something else that's going on, Dave, I see, let me pull it up here, my favorite cabinet. I have my BFF, my Kudlow, but I'm not referencing him, but Wilbur Ross. I guess he's his commerce secretary for now, and there is word out that perhaps he might be replaced by the end of the year. This is from a CNBC report. President Donald Trump is telling people he wants to replace the Secretary Wilbur Ross by the end of the year. Trump is favoring Linda McMahon.
Lovely.
Pardon?
Lovely.
Yeah, I mean, she has the Small Business Administration, and she's a former CEO of the World Wrestling Entertainment. I guess maybe because the trade talks with perhaps China are not going as according to plan or something, or is not being, I don't know. I didn't know there was an issue. President Trump and Wilbur Ross go way back. And again, Wilbur Ross used to work for the Rothschilds Bank, and from what I've read, Trump had been befriended Ross when he worked for the Rothschilds Bank to get his first bailout loan. So it's kind of interesting to see, although Ross is 80 years old, so it could also be maybe health issues that they don't want to, you know, really talk about. He's a multi-billionaire. And White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she didn't deny that McMahon has become the lead contender to replace Ross. So there were no personnel announcements, no changes at this point in time. So we'll have to see. I'm not sure if they have anybody else in line. I think there was one other person.
Yeah, there's a guy who's head of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, Ray Washburn.
Yeah.
Who is said to be under consideration as well.
So we'll see how that, what happens. We'll keep following up on that. And something else before we start getting into some of these other things, we have the debt ceiling is coming back into the news, is set to a record high of $22 trillion. So that'll be coming into the news soon. And almost 115 million Americans and households are getting government assistance. And again, you know, those are programs that everyone wants to attack. They want to attack the entitlements instead of cutting back anywhere else. So they certainly don't cut back on their paychecks or their benefits or anything like that. So the only place they feel they can cut is the entitlements. So coming to you soon, ladies and gentlemen. So we're not sure how, who, what, when, and where, but it is. They're going to have to start addressing something in the very near future. We had, let me go back over to this report. Wholesale price increases the most in 6 years. Wholesale prices rose by the most in 6 years, led higher by, of course, more expensive gas, more expensive food, and more expensive chemicals. And this was reported this morning by the Labor Department that the Producer Price Index, the PPI, that measures price increases before they reach you, the consumer, leapt 0.6% in October after a smaller 0.2% rise in September. So the PPI increased 2.9% from a year earlier. And of course, if we exclude that volatile food and energy categories, core wholesale prices rose 0.5% in October and 2.6% from a year earlier. So, you know, they think inflation is in check, Dave. But they don't do their own shopping. They have maids and helpers to do their shopping. You know, government employees.
Do they?
They do.
Well, the Fed is keeping a close eye on price changes as it monitors the economy for signs of overheating. We'll have more on the Fed in today's second segment. The unemployment rate's at a five-decade low of 3.7%, according to the government. And, of course, excluding underemployed and discouraged workers. And companies are raising wages and salaries to attract and keep workers. Average hourly pay reportedly rose in October from a year earlier at the fastest pace in almost a decade. Yes, but barely staying even with inflation. Companies may have to raise prices to offset the cost of higher pay, which could spur higher inflation. But businesses could also invest in more machinery and software to make their employees more efficient, which would enable them to pay more without raising prices. We'll also talk a little bit more about employee productivity later on in today's program. Well, today's BLS report, Melody, showed that wholesale gas prices rose over 7.5% last month, while food costs increased a whole 1%. The price of new cars fell 0.7% as automakers introduced their new car lines last month. Newer cars typically include additional features, and the government reflects that by lowering its measure of auto prices.
Well, you know, it's interesting. A preliminary reading on consumer sentiment for November was released today, and it came in slightly above expectations. And you know what I find is, I don't know what type of lag it has compared to, like, when we're reading about, you know, the big drop in mortgages and home building and everything like that. It surprises that, you know, that this preliminary reading is you know, higher than expectations. But this is the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index hit 98.3. Of course, everybody's 98. You know, it's really not that much of a big big of a gain. But
over expectations.
Over expectations, yeah. Know, you know, right. So it's pretty much, you know, the same. And consumer sentiment remained virtually unchanged in early November from its October reading. And income expectations have improved. Consumers are anticipating some robust growth in employment. But consumers also anticipate rising inflation and higher interest rates. So,
yeah. You know, the... let's see, the change in October kept this index on pace for its best year since 2000. Now, to answer your question, the latest look at a consumer sentiment comes right after the U.S. midterm elections, when Democrats took control of the House while Republicans maintained their majority in the Senate. A majority of economists, interestingly, who were surveyed, believe that congressional gridlock will be good for the stock market in the months ahead. As we like to say on Financial Survival Melody,
yes,
we shall see.
We shall see. Speaking of consumers, Americans are spending more than ever for used cars. The average price of a used vehicle hit an all-time high for the third quarter of 2018. At $20,000, the average price was up 3.5% from the same period a year ago and up nearly 19% from 5 years earlier. And rising interest rates are actually driving these costs even higher. So now you have the average American used car buyer is now paying a record high of $400 per month. And you have loans averaging 67 months. And this has been the longest ever for used cars. I can't, like, what's the point of buying because if, well, it's the $20,000. New cars cost you $40,000 and $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's incredible. A shift, but there's no inflation. A shift in preferences toward larger vehicles, namely SUVs and pickups, is one reason why average prices are moving higher. Monthly payments on a used Ford F-150 pickup average $492. I mean, these are just incredible numbers. While monthly payments on a used Toyota Corolla sedan averaged $295. So these are a little less expensive vehicles, but they're getting harder and harder to find as well.
Yes, they are, Melody. You know, we talk about this debt. I mean, we've total personal debt in the U.S. As of this second of $19,305 billion. Now, of that, you know, is, you know, $15.3 trillion is mortgage debt, $1.6 is student loan debt, a little over $1 million credit card debt. So, in that $19 trillion falls auto debt, as part of it. You know, all told, personal debt per citizen, $58,679. So keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. You know, 5 years ago, about one in four used vehicles were sold for less than $10,000. Now it's one in six. If you're looking for a deal, chances you'll have to buy a passenger car, such as a compact sedan. You know, despite the increased cost of used vehicles, new vehicles are still much more expensive. Americans paid an average of a little over $37,000 for a new vehicle in October, that according to Cox Automotive. You know, used cars definitely remain the best bet for savers if you're like most people and you're just going home, you're just going from home to work to do basic things, you don't need the latest and greatest melody.
Well, you know what? U.S. crude oil is falling again. It fell today back for a 10th consecutive session, sinking U.S. crude futures deeper into a bear market territory and wiping out the benchmark's gains for the whole year. The 10-day decline is the longest losing streak for U.S. crude since mid-1984. Crude futures are poised to for their fifth straight week of losses as growing output from key producers and a deteriorating outlook for oil demand deepen a sell-off spurred by the October's broader market plunge. So the drop marks a stunning reversal from last month when oil prices hit nearly four-year highs. The reality is that we're still in a world where we're overproducing and we've got surplus. And this comes from an analyst out of J.P. Morgan, Dave.
Yeah, WTI officially fell into a bear market yesterday, tumbling more than 20% from a four-year high last month at $76.90 per barrel. International benchmark Brent crude was down 19% from its recent high. Brent has fallen in nine of the last 10 sessions, but it is still up almost 5% this year. Now, oil prices spiked in early October on fears that U.S. sanctions on Iran would thin out global oil supplies. However, the U.S. granted temporary sanction relief to eight countries that we talked about on Monday, and that has allowed Iranian crude exports to continue and ease concern about undersupply. Analysts now expect the loss of imports from Iran to be less severe than originally anticipated. Meanwhile, go ahead.
Oh, so the sanctions then on Iran really aren't that big of an impact on them.
Well, apparently not initially. I haven't seen the October numbers broken down by country. Of course, these only took effect November 4th, so we'll probably have to wait until next month to get a breakdown of how that is playing out, at least at the outset.
Well, you know what? What's interesting, well, we got a minute. We can bring this back when we come back from break, is a federal judge in Montana halted construction of the Keystone pipeline.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere.
That the U.S. government did not complete a full analysis of the environmental impact of the Trans-Canada project. So we're going to talk about that when we get back from the break. I don't know if that has anything to do perhaps with the trade tariffs with Canada. Don't know. We'll talk about it when we get back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And going into the break, we were talking about how a federal judge in Montana has halted the construction of the Keystone oil pipeline yesterday on the grounds that the U.S. government did not complete a full analysis of the environmental impact of the Trans-Canada project. The ruling deals a major setback for Trans-Canada and could possibly delay the construction of the $8 billion 1,180-mile pipeline. So this is a victory for the environmentalists, tribal groups, and ranchers who have spent more than a decade fighting against construction of the pipeline that will carry the heavy crude to Steel City, Nebraska, from Canada's oil sands in Alberta. The U.S. District Court Judge Brian Morse ruling late on Thursday came in a lawsuit that several environmental groups filed against the government in 2017. And well, it's been a long fight. You know, it just isn't a recent one, Dave.
No, it's been going on for some time. I mean, Morris wrote in his ruling that U.S. State Department environmental analysis fell short of a hard look at the cumulative effect of greenhouse gas emissions and the impact on Native American land resources. He also ruled the analysis failed to fully review the effects of the current oil price on the pipeline's viability and didn't fully model potential oil spills and offer mitigation measures. So, you know, Judge Morris ordered the government to issue a more thorough analysis before the project can move forward. I got to believe that the government will appeal this ruling. I'm not sure what circuit it would go to, but you know, our president has said the project would lower consumer fuel prices, create jobs, and reduce U.S. dependence on foreign oil.
Well, you know, with trade tensions between Washington and Beijing as they continue to drag on, the soybean farmers, our American soybean farmers, are seeing falling prices and rising inventories as they're trying to replace their biggest market. The Agriculture Department lowered its production and export outlook, according to a report released yesterday, and increased its inventory estimates. We got to remember that Beijing placed a 25% import tax on soybeans in July to retaliate the tit for tat for the administration's tariffs.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, soybean shipments to China.
Soybean shipments
to China have dropped sharply since then as Beijing turns to South America and other countries with fewer trade barriers. Exports to that country were down 94% in mid-October from a year earlier. Now, that's obviously a big deal for American farmers who've seen their inventories swell to record levels. China is, we've been told, is the largest destination for soybeans in the world, accounting for more than half of global imports in 2017. Now, in July, the administration did unveil a $12 billion emergency aid to farmers, those who risk suffering financial losses from the U.S. trade policies. Soybean farmers were poised to get a large portion of benefits from that controversial plan, Melody.
Yeah, and this is a one-time program, and we didn't see how that money has been divvied up. It'd be kind of interesting to see who got what and how much. But anyway, we have a you do a weekly blog, Dave. That's out as we speak, and the listeners can subscribe to our blog if you go to dgscoins.com and just sign up for the newsletter. This is something we do in addition to the newsletter. And this one is about the Fed, interest rates, and global debt.
Yes, it is, Melody. You know, the Federal Reserve pitched a vision of blissful enlightenment yesterday that shows its steadfast resolve in the wake of recent economic and geopolitical volatility, thus paving the way for more interest rate hikes and a recession in spite of itself, the Fed, that is. With friends like this, who needs a good witch of the North? Right, Dorothy? Well, as we know, the Fed this week left the Fed funds rate alone at their range of 2 to 2.25%, as almost universally expected, while making just a slight adjustment in its official wrap-up statement. The Fed said it expects further gradual increases in the target range for the Fed funds rate, dependent upon continued economic expansion, strong labor conditions, and inflation near its 2% target. Fed also indicated it doesn't expect inflation to force rates upward, noting that its preferred measure, the Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, PCE, looks to remain 2%, near 2% for the next year.
I think everybody's in consensus that the Fed's going to raise a quarter point in December next month.
Well, you know, the CME Group's FedWatch tool shows that the probability of a 25 basis point rate hike next month is 76%. You know, there's a probability of 24% that rates will remain the same. Now, probabilities of possible Fed fund target rates are based on Fed fund future contract prices, you know, assuming that the rate hike is 25 basis points and that the Fed fund's effective rate will react by a like amount. For 2019 and beyond, though, Melody, there's no consensus, although the Fed currently forecasts three more rate hikes next year.
My bet would be if the 10-year is above 3.25, they're not going to raise. If it remains below that, they'll raise. So that's what my crystal ball is telling me. So
interesting. I can't say that I think we'd be hard pressed to disagree with that.
Oh, okay, so we'll have to see. What's the date that they meet in December? Is it right, the week before Christmas? Isn't it?
I thought it was
weeks.
The week before. Yeah.
Okay.
The second week in December, but we'll confirm that on Monday.
But with the raising rates, there's those that worry about that the economy is going to slow down, or that the Fed's tightening is going to slow growth, forcing the Fed to slow down, or maybe even stop the rate hike.
Interesting. Well, you know, perhaps Peter Buchvar of Bleakley Financial said it best. You know, the FOMC statement just released could have been the most boring, dull, and uneventful statement I've read in a long time. Those are Buchvar's words. And that's just as Jay Powell likely wanted it to be. Now, what was missing from the Fed statement is more interesting than the little it said. It's telling that the statement omitted any mention of financial stability as a result of the surge in market volatility, you know, and the resulting stock market plunge last month. And to me, it's inexplicable that it didn't talk about the effects of tariffs on higher inflation or increasing wages or the anemic housing and auto sectors. However, as the keeper of all things bullish, at least in the paper markets, the Fed's lack of potentially market-plunging comments you know, and the market sell-off and other bad news isn't so surprising at all.
Well, you know, you wrote that some Fed groupies believe that the U.S. central bank could cause the stock market to plunge if he didn't raise rates in December.
Yeah, boy, how true. Former Wells Fargo CEO Dick Kovacevich said the Fed has to hike rates because it has telegraphed it will do so. He said if it doesn't, the markets will plunge because it's going to seem like the Fed caved to the president, you know, who's been critical of recent rate hikes. He added that the independence of the Federal Reserve is instrumental to any market economy. If that ever comes into question, the market's going to react very negatively. Now, he continued, because we have a very strong economy, we have very low employment, we have reasonably low inflation, the Fed doesn't need to continue to be accommodative. Instead, the central bank says it has to get to a neutral rate, which Kovacevich thinks is between 3% and 3.5%. Now, I don't know, Melody. I'm not a fan whatsoever of the too-big-to-fail Wells Fargo. And for one thing, I'm reminded that Kovacevich was Wells Fargo's CEO during the onset of its overly aggressive and corrupt sales practices. You know, those dating as far back as the late 90s that overcharged countless thousands of customers. But for another, and, you know, perhaps more importantly, the paper market and its puppeteers just continue to look for any and all ways to keep it propped up a while longer beyond any reasonable sense of reality.
You also mentioned about the world economy is facing risks ranging from surging non-financial corporate debt to the U.S. fights with creditors and the potential for a new global dividing line.
Correct. You know, those concerns dominated the Bloomberg New Economy Forum in Singapore this week, you know, where, among others, quote friend, former Fed Chair Janet Yellen, warned that the U.S. might struggle to cope with lending risks that have spread beyond banks. It's amazing how these former Fed chairs especially become a little more loose-lipped when they're no longer, you know, chained to, you know, I guess what they perceive as their responsibility in their roles. BlackRock chair Larry Fink doubted the wisdom of the U.S.'s fights with lenders such as, you know, China, EU countries, and others who fund 40% of our budget deficit. You know, as we mentioned Wednesday, in the starkest warning of the day, former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson said an economic iron curtain could emerge as the U.S. and China throw up trade walls. You know, he said at the opening of the event, Washington now strikes many people as attempting to disrupt all aspects of China's external economic relationships. The risks setting Washington up for a new round of battles with its allies and partners, the very partners it needs to help alter Chinese behavior.
And you also said that Fink questioned the contradiction of the U.S. battling against those who help finance its government.
Well, it's true. You know, he's worried that a forecast $1.3 trillion budget deficit is premised on the economy expanding at 3%, which he apparently believes is too high. He believes a shortfall in that respect could blow out further if the U.S. or world economy slip and, you know, push borrowing costs higher. And that's certainly a valid concern. Interestingly, Gary Cohn, President Trump's former top economic advisor, said he doesn't see a quick resolution to the U.S. trade tensions, U.S.-China trade tensions, since the midterm elections.
Well, you know, that's one thing, Janet Yellen, it's funny that she's now beginning to pop in and out with her comments and so forth, because everything she ever said was it's data dependent.
Yes.
And so she gave a warning how the U.S. might not be able to manage risks from the migrating debt, and we are more attentive to the emergence of risks outside the banking system, she said.
Yeah, it's true. You know, she also added it's unclear, at least in the U.S., that we have the appropriate tools to deal with these. And Indonesia's finance minister, who was there, also pointed out that the Fed needs to pay attention to the effects of its policies. The problem, Yellen responded to that, is that the Fed is congressionally mandated to put America first. Ah, yeah, there's some rich and painful irony, Melody. I guess there really is no place like home.
And, you know, you conclude by saying that the Treasury could, as some are suggesting, intervene in these exchange markets using the little used exchange stabilization fund in response to, say, China's 10% devaluation of its fiat yuan.
Yeah, and the Fed could decide to cooperate by delaying or, you know, even ending abruptly further rate hikes, you know, thus weakening the dollar and stimulating the economy, albeit through the back door, and increasing prices, especially food and energy as well. That'd be good for gold and silver. You know, either way, with the Fed looking out for America, we had better be prepared for increased economic uncertainty, at the very least.
And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, where we're going, you know, it's going to be gold and silver. I mean, there's so much. And the reason we talk about what's going on with China and the Feds, and, yeah, it doesn't mean that we're fans of these entities. It's just to show you just how dangerous that the world system is. It's so interconnected, Dave, anymore.
It is.
So yeah, when you have a little country like, you know, Turkey sneezes, everybody does get a cold. They just don't talk about it. And that's what we try to bring to you, just to show you just how dangerous and fragile these world systems are. And the people that are controlling these, you know, these central banks and so forth, they've never been in this position before. We've never been in a place where we have trillions and trillions of dollars in debt for governments, and corporate debt in the trillions of dollars, and personal debt in trillions of dollars. We've never been here before. So, ladies and gentlemen, get prepared, because what's the old saying? Debt doesn't matter until it does.
Yeah.
And so... maybe a little bit more on a semi-lighthearted note, maybe. Mm-hmm. A new TV anchor joined the Chinese news agency, and it is a cyborg robot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's not human. So China's state-run news agency has launched an artificial intelligence anchor. I saw a picture of him. It looks like a guy. It looks like,
yeah,
a man.
Yeah. Haven't seen him speak, but the photo is, like, it's eye-opening.
It is. English AI anchor debuted.
We'll call him Al.
Call him Al.
Let's call him Al.
Debuted Thursday at the World Internet Conference in the country's eastern Zhejiang province. Modeled on the agency's Hang Zhao presenter, the new anchor learns from live videos and is able to work 24 hours a day, reporting via social media and on the website. And amazing.
Scary.
Absolutely amazing. It is scary.
Watch out, Al Roker.
Yeah.
Your time is coming.
We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And back, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We're in the last segment of the program today. We will be here Monday. It is Veterans Day. Well, actually, Veterans Day is Sunday. I believe banks and post offices are probably closed on Monday the 12th, but markets are open, so we will be open for business also. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. No rest for the weary here. We have to wait until Thanksgiving in order to get a break here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. So, which is... Yeah, less than 2 weeks away. It's just incredible how fast this year has gone by. And so we're heading into our third segment of the day, and we have a new bi-weekly segment, The Long and Short of Gold. We're going to do this every other Friday, and this segment features a handful of information, rich briefs on gold and silver, thus the term long and short of gold. And we hope you appreciate these precious metals insights. Dave?
Well, first up, as listeners know, gold is an important part of central banks' foreign exchange reserves. We report on it every now and then. According to the International Monetary Fund, as of June 30th, 2018, central banks collectively owned $1.36 trillion worth of gold. It's around 10% of these global foreign exchange reserves. And central banks are an important part of the gold market. In the first half of this year, they accounted for 10% of gold demand. Central banks added a total of 193 tons of gold to their reserves in the first 6 months of 2018. That's an 8% increase from the 178 tons bought in the same period last year, and marks the strongest first half for central bank gold buying since 2015. Now, looking ahead, the World Gold Council expects central bank demand across the globe to remain buoyant, in its words. It believes diversification will continue to be an important driver of demand, as will the transition to a multipolar currency reserve system over the coming years.
Very interesting. Currency reserve system.
Yeah, so we'll have to keep our eyes open for that one.
Absolutely. And again, here's another example of, they put pressure on gold, so they buy the gold. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's nothing new. Yes, they manipulate it down. And ladies and gentlemen, be thankful. Yes, we get frustrated because the prices are held down, but be thankful that allows us to buy it at a more reasonable price. You know, you want to buy it at 3,000 or 4,000? No. So every day that they hit it, yeah, it gets frustrating. We want our investments to perform a little bit better than what they have. But hang on to your seats because eventually, or your hats, because eventually, again, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 for gold, I have no doubt. And the gold demand for the U.S. was 964 tons in the third quarter, about 6.2 tons higher year over year. There was the robust buying by the Fed, and a 13% rise in consumer demand offset the large ETF outflows. We saw bar and coin demand jump 28% to 298 tons as retail investors took advantage of these lower gold and silver prices. And jewelry demand rose 6%. Number of central bank buyers saw demand in this sector rise 22% year over year to the highest level of quarterly net purchases since 2015. And technology registered its eighth consecutive quarter of year over year growth, up 1%. And you're going to talk about silver and a form of infection. This is fascinating.
Yeah, for sure. This was another eye-opener. Primary anemic meningoencephalitis, or PAM, P-A-M. That's a form of infection where ravenous single-celled organisms called amoebas find their way to a person's central nervous system and brain. Well, what does this have to do with silver? Well, we'll get to that. Most commonly contracted from polluted water, the disease has no official treatment and has thus far proven fatal in nearly all cases. But scientists are now turning to, yes, silver, in order to facilitate recovery in what would otherwise be a hopeless situation. A team of researchers at the Sunway University in Malaysia believes silver nanoparticles, real tiny, are the ideal method to introduce anti-seizure drugs, which shut down the brain-eating amoebas, to a patient's body with greater effect. The lead researcher on the case noted that humans' tolerance to silver makes the precious metal a good candidate for introducing drugs to the bloodstream. He added that the surface of the silver nanoparticles allows one to deliver a greater dosage of drugs than through standalone applications. These experiments, Melody, are the latest in an array of promising scientific research where gold and silver nanoparticles are used to deliver drugs to a person's body with apparent but unconfirmed, unparalleled efficiency. Perhaps a story we should forward to our good friend Wendy Wilson for further follow-up in the future.
Well, colloidal silver is so very important, ladies and gentlemen. When you have your, when you're doing your preparations and your, for your storage, for preparing, for in your medicine cabinet, each and every one of you should have colloidal silver in there. And there's certain kinds to purchase and so forth. And we should ask Wendy to talk a little bit about colloidal silver. It's so important, and what she would have in her herbs to, perhaps enhance. Maybe the herbs would enhance the colloidal silver. And so very important to have. And and since we're speaking of silver, we, as we mentioned recently, the gold-silver ratio is about 84. And that's the highest it's been since March 1993. It reached its highest in over 100 years when it hit 99 in early 1991. And what that means is that you currently buy 84 ounces of silver for every 1 ounce of gold. Several silver investors, of course, are recommending that investors should consider trading some of your gold for your silver. And then when it reaches 71, then you can trade some of that out and get some gold. Remember that silver is at this point in time an industrial metal. And but usually in times of financial crisis, it will revert back to a monetary metal. So give us a call, ladies and gentlemen, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Dave?
Melody, thanks. Back to our Sino friends, S-I-N-O, that is. I mean, China's government reportedly is cracking down on dissent at an alarming pace and has been detaining up to 1 million Muslims in re-education camps. But a UN Human Rights Council review this past week, many countries saw fit to applaud China's human rights accord rather than to criticize it. China's economic power and investments around the world aren't just increasing its global influence. It seems that they're making countries far more reticent to speak out about Beijing's abuses at home. Sophie Richardson, who's China director at Human Rights Watch, said, we might be moving on to the next bad phase where we not only see how few countries are critical of China, but how many are willing to be cheerleaders. Whoa. A case in point, Melody, Pakistan and Kazakhstan have both been directly affected by China's mass detention in the Xinjiang province, with citizens or family members from both countries being held.
Well, you know, both of them are heavily reliant, both countries are heavily reliant on Chinese investment and trade, and neither criticized China at this week's review, the first since 2013, which featured comments from 150 countries. Countries that did speak out, though, included Japan, Germany, the United States, which called on China to close the internment camps and free the possible millions being held. And I don't know why this is any big surprise. I mean, you know, it's China, okay, ladies and gentlemen? But China's vice foreign minister responded to the criticism by saying, we will not accept the politically driven accusations from a few countries that are fraught with biases, with total disregard for facts. No country shall dictate the definition of democracy and human rights. It's really kind of, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, Dave.
It's a joke.
Yes, it is. Richardson goes on and he noted that the Muslim countries were notably silent on the treatment of China's Muslim minority. She put it that way. If any other government in the world was credibly accused of detaining 1 million Muslims, they think that we could reasonably conclude there would be calls for a debate in the UN Security Council. But this is China, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, some
we
people
forget.
Think they're going to get away with it. The Brookings Institution.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Yeah, Ted Piccone documents China's success in limiting criticism in international institutions in a recent report. He wrote, Beijing is building a strong coalition within the UN, mainly of developing countries more vulnerable to Beijing's economic and political pressure and which share its wish to prioritize development over human rights. European states, however, he continues, are not doing as much as they could to stand up against China on human rights. Explanations include protection of their growing economic and commercial interests with the Asian giant, as well as geostrategic and political goals in managing China's rise. So it's not just the tone that's of the discussion that's getting softer, or that the topics under discussion are softer. It's that the institutions themselves are under threat from China. If you can't have a conversation at the UN about what's happening in China, you're not going to have that conversation anywhere.
Well, no, but the whole point is nobody cares what China does to the people. I mean, that's their communist nation. You know, well, the only thing anybody cares about is, of course, trade and how much money they can get from China and vice versa. And, or technology, they continue to accuse China of theft of technology from these multinational corporations. That's mm-hmm. all. That's all anybody ever cares about. Not people, not humans. And, but anyway.
Self-economic interest. Yeah.
President Trump issued a proclamation this morning for a limited period disqualifying any immigrant who crosses the U.S. southern border illegally from asylum due to the new rule established by Homeland Security and the Justice Department. I heard that gal was on her way out, too, the one on the Homeland Security.
Ah, wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I heard that she's possibly will be looking for a new job. But the proclamation is specifically targeted at the caravan at the that's making its way up through Mexico. And they still got several weeks to get here. And they're trying to channel these illegal aliens to ports of entry so that they can enter in an orderly and controlled manner. Let's see if there's any. But under U.S. law, any migrant who has been on American soil for under a year has the right to apply for asylum, regardless of whether they've entered legally or illegally. Well, you know, that's what he's trying to stop, and I have to give him kudos for that.
If they pass a credible fear test, asylum seekers will either be held in detention centers or released into the U.S. until their asylum case is completed. Only a quarter of all affirmative asylum applications were approved in the first three quarters of this year, according to data from the USCIS. The proclamation also instructs additional resources to be sent to the border, as there are already extremely long wait times for those seeking asylum at those ports of entry. You know, the suspension expires after 90 days, but within that time, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, and the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security can recommend that the President extend or renew the suspension. Melody.
Well, you know, we have Amazon. The employees are criticizing the company's facial recognition system. They raise civil rights concerns about the technology's potential misuse. An employee reported that they and their colleagues were disappointed in the response. Andy Jassy, the CEO of the company's cloud computing arm, Amazon Web Services, deflected employee criticisms over how Amazon has aggressively marketed its Amazon's recognition product to law enforcement agencies across the country. He says he thinks we're going to have people who have opinions that are very wide-ranging, but they think that is, you know, they feel really great and really strongly about the value that this recognition is providing for customers. And, you know, it's just... What a world we live in, you know. It doesn't seem that technology truly is our friend anymore, is it?
Jeez. Well, you know, though the company-wide Q&A session wasn't meant to only address concerns about this recognition, it's obviously a topic on major employees' minds, as is the end of the show, Melody.
I know, it's hard to believe. It's Friday, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back on Monday, and I will be Dave, thank you for joining, and I'll see you. We'll talk to you on Monday also. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. Oh.